CJSF is diverse, independent, and yours. Supported and empowered by the students of SFU and listeners like you. For your community, by your community. You are CJSF.
Refer to disabilities in the following interview are strictly those of the individual.
In this segment of our show, Paul Gilbert will be telling us about the Canadian Association of Professionals with Disabilities.
So what can you tell me about the association?
Well, we're a national nonprofit. We're not a registered charity, we're just a nonprofit. We decided not to be a registered charity because at the time it cost a fortune to get audited. So do the registered part, which is a charity. We're consumer-driven, we're by and for people with disabilities, professional with disabilities. For us, professionals are both registered and unregistered, and professions are mostly provincial, except for the federal regulated industries. Let's see, what else is there? We exist to further the interests of to advance the interests of professionals with disabilities, regardless of whatever the disability is, and wherever they are in their lifespan.
So, how do you go about reaching out to professionals with disabilities?
Well, we have a website that you saw, I imagine. It's been around for a while. We get people come across us fairly frequently. I mean, every month I receive several phone calls. But it's mostly that's mostly it. It's mostly through contact, people contacting us through the phone, because we don't actually have any funds. We're all volunteer driven.
So, what are the key areas of focus that the organization's working on?
Well, key areas of focus. Well, we do a lot of research we've done a lot of research on areas that people with disabilities are marginalized, and so. The main area that have been doing, is support for individuals trying to navigate the world and deal with the issues of getting into a career and advancing through their careers. I mean, it's pretty typical for us to come across a problem with really people early on in their careers, but they think that the Employment Equity Act helps them. They think that telling an employer that they have a disability will actually make it easier for them to get hired. And that's not actually true. The disabled are not really included in the DEI efforts of corporations. The government does a little bit more, but it's mostly government.
Go ahead.
I mean, it's hard to actually say exactly where the numbers are because the government actually, a few years ago, they did a 20-year review of the Employment Equity Act. And the numbers were exactly the same as when the Employment Equity Act came in. Basically, for the last 30 years, the numbers haven't changed. And then recently, the government increased the numbers, but I didn't see any changes in behavior that actually justified the increase in numbers. But mostly I'm thinking of federally regulated corporations. It used to be 3% of the numbers in the report that we came out in for the 20-year anniversary was the same as the beginning of the of when the Employment Equity Act came in. But, I mean, the numbers for people with disabilities participation in the workforce around the world, in an industrialized world, have basically remained the same at the same time. I always thought it was kind of interesting that Americans would have the Americans with Disability Act and we have the Employment Equity Act, and they came up roughly the same time, but theirs actually advances their rights, and ours basically advances rights of a whole bunch of minority groups, including the disabled, but it doesn't actually segment them, so the disabled don't have any special place in the collection. So if somebody's going to decide between hiring an Indigenous person or a gay person or a woman or whatever, they just pick which equity group they want to work for with, and they hire those. It's it doesn't actually ever really advance the disabled specifically.
So I assume a lot of your work relates to debunking the myths surrounding the Employment Equity Act for people with disabilities to give them.
Well, the first major Canadian conference on employment equity in 1992, and I've been following pretty closely since then. It's just any of the issues around employment and the disabled. Well, we know that the disabled actually are pretty seriously marginalized in every part of their careers. And the research on disability discrimination is not as good as it could be. I mean, for example, what was it? A number of years back, they recognized, they did research showing that employers automatically assumed that somebody with a disability was not going to be as productive as somebody without. Then, about 10 years later, they did research that identified that coworkers felt the same way. So it's been really gradual process of actually identifying the barriers and nailing them down empirically. But it's been a very slow, gradual, slow process.
So, in your work, have you seen any success moments or steps forward you'd like to share?
Mostly just within individuals. Oh, shoot. I have... Hold on one second. I've got a... We did various things. Like, we've had activities like focus groups, meetings where we connected with a bunch of people, a whole bunch of different people, and sharing perspectives and developed some research. Those are basically the high points. But it's not been on a grand scale because we just didn't have the funding for it. But a lot of it's just providing supports into one-on-one online or in person. With people that just are looking to figure out how to get into the workforce and how to maybe stay there. My background actually, for about 25 years, I was a vocational rehab consultant, which actually was quite interesting because for me, my assumption about barriers impacting the disabled were I thought you could negotiate them easier than you actually can until my disability, actually, my visual impairment actually became more pronounced, and I encountered the sort of problems people encounter in the workforce with people having biases against the disabled that other people that I was helping had encountered. It's a lot more insidious and a lot more pervasive than as a rehab consultant I thought. And I'd have things where I would arrange placements for people, and then I'd find out that when they got there, they were actually, the employer was actually pretty rude to them or what have you. It took a lot more actually digging into it to make sure that people were actually being supported the way they needed to be. That's the rehab kind of it. I just, mostly just, a lot of it's just the one-on-one support. That's probably the highlight. In any area of counseling, it's always the highlight, helping individuals move forward.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great. In this segment of our show, Teresa Tancock will be telling us a little bit about her work with the Canadian Deafblind Association. So what can you tell me about your work with the Deafblind Association?
The Canadian Deafblind Association, British Columbia, is funded by the Ministry of Children and Family Development, and we support children and youth from birth to 24 years across the province. We're funded for three main programs: our early intervention program, our intervention program, and our youth transition program. Within that, we have other programs and services that we also provide, but those are the three main ones.
So when you mention youth services, I'd imagine that's things like navigating school and learning to use the abilities you do have in such situations.
Yes, we support primarily the home and community aspect. There is another program, the Provincial Outreach Program for Students with Deafblindness within the Ministry of Education, and they support directly within the school. But what we do is we attend school team meetings, we support the families in trying to navigate the world, home and community, and also how that crosses over into the school programs. So we're more on the family, community, home side than just directly within the schools.
So, how do you reach out to folks with disabilities to let them know that that you are a source of support?
Sorry, can you ask that again? Sorry.
Sure. So, how do you reach out to folks with disabilities to let them know that that you've got their back?
We're involved in and collaborate with many other agencies. We have a shared vision program. We have council services providers for the deaf and hard of hearing and deafblind community. And we also receive our referrals from medical professionals and people within the community and connect with them that way. We also connect with the schools as well to let them know our services, et cetera. We have our website. We also, like I say, are involved in many other programs, and many other agencies support us, and we support them and collaborate together. So our word gets out that way as well.
So in your work, do you ever encounter any myths or stereotypes concerning deafblindness?
Oh, yes. One thing that is very important is deafblindness is not deaf and blind. It's deaf times blind. And the complexities around the unique disability of this dual sensory loss are huge. It's not a matter of just not being able to see and not being able to hear, but it's access to the community and the world around you. It's access to sensory. It's access to communication. It's access to the physical world around them. And an individual with deafblindness needs the support of an intervener to do this. They need the support of someone who can act as their eyes and ears and who can help them navigate that world to the best of their ability.
So I'd imagine that establishing the initial communication can sometimes pose a challenge, just getting them to the place where they can understand that, yes, someone's here and they're here to help me.
Very much so. We actually, our early intervention program is quite unique in that we, because of our early hearing screening program here in British Columbia, we are able to have children identified as deafblind often right from birth. So our early intervention program helps families and professionals to learn to navigate this new world of deafblindness and to learn how to communicate with their child and how to allow their child to be able to participate within the world around them to the best of their ability. We then take that right up to 24 years, helping individuals learn how to navigate transitions into preschool, into daycares, into kindergarten, into middle school, high school, and then into the adult world, training and supporting people in the adult programs who will be having the individuals, who will be supporting those individuals as adults.
So in your time with the association, is there any success moment or story that stands out for you that you'd like to share?
Wow. so many success stories. I mean, however small or large they may be. One thing within our services, COVID was detrimental to deafblindness, the world of deafblindness and how we support. Deafblindness needs to be direct and in-person contact. But with COVID, that wasn't possible. And we developed our virtual recreation program through COVID, and it's still going today. Families are receiving craft supplies through the Postal Service. They get it to their homes, and these craft supplies are tailored to different activities and crafts and cooking that we then do virtually. So we meet virtually with children and youth across British Columbia, with their families, with the interveners, and we create and we sing and we watch stories and we do it all virtually. And it's something that came out of COVID that we never thought imaginable before. We didn't realize that deafblindness could be on some level successful as a virtual, with a virtual component. We have a team of interveners that come together seasonally to plan these programs and to make sure that they follow a theme. We have sign language that supports it, and it's become quite a major program within our realm.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
I sure can.
Thanks. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
The Canadian Human Trafficking Hotline is now live to help victims and survivors get vital social and emergency services. If you need help or want to help stop human trafficking, call 1-833-900-1010.
Welcome back to HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, Paul Gilbert told us a little bit about the Association of Professionals with Disabilities, and we heard about the Canadian Deafblind Association from Teresa Tancock. In this segment of our show, Anne-Marie Pham will be telling us a little bit about CCDI. So what can you tell me about CCDI?
CCDI stands for the Canadian Centre for Diversity and Inclusion, and we are a national charity that was established back in 2013, originally as the Canadian Institute for Diversity and Inclusion. And over the course of a number of years, we merged with an organization, and then we were renamed as the Canadian Centre for Diversity and Inclusion. So originally, we were founded through the support of 25 employer partners across Canada, and today this has expanded to around 700 organizations. So we're very happy with, you know, the evolution of CCDI, where now we have over 45 team members all over Canada, from Vancouver all the way to Antigua Nation, Nova Scotia. And in terms of the goals of CCDI, we're really hoping to strengthen diversity, equity, inclusion, and accessibility in Canadian workplaces, in schools, and in various communities from coast to coast to coast. Our vision is really to build a more inclusive Canada for all, and we do that by bringing together and supporting people to really become the change agents that we believe they can be. And we do that through convening thought leaders, convening individual practitioners and employers through thought leadership, research, education, and action.
So what are some of the critical areas in terms of accessibility that that you're working on to make change for?
Yeah, when it comes to accessibility, you know, this is a growing field that employers are really spending more time on, although there's still many, many gaps, both systemic and attitudinal. But with the, you know, the federal government and provincial governments putting more legislation into place to ensure that there's compliance around accessibility, you will see more employers really looking at accessibility through different lenses, such as physical accessibility, you know, having ramps, having elevators, you know, finding adaptation in older buildings, making sure, you know, that, you know, doors can open easily, having desks that fit monitors that are ergonomically appropriate for different folks, good lighting, you know, good physical environment for everyone, especially those, you know, who have more differences in the requirements that they need. But in addition to that, you know, we're also seeing more and more employers who are recognizing the need to understand the more invisible disabilities. And if we look at the statistics in Canada, we've seen that, you know, the growth of persons with disabilities has gone up in Canada. And that's for a number of reasons. It's because we have, you know, an aging population. And so with age comes more disabilities over time. And we're also seeing a better understanding of what disability is, including episodic disabilities, including, you know, recurring disabilities. So sometimes, you know, somebody could be full functioning in the workplace, but because of their episodic disabilities, they may need to take time off here and there. Also, we have a better understanding of how stress and burnout show up in the workplace and how workplaces need to provide more balance, you know, at work, and more support for individuals going through those challenges. And, you know, there's more conversations around, you know, when somebody has suffered, you know, a health episode, how we can better reintegrate that individual back into the workplace in a respectful way, in a meaningful way, while acknowledging that they're still, you know, many times over full contributing members of the team. And so it requires people to have flexibility, to have adaptability in the way that they think, in the way that they work, in the way that they treat each other. And maybe lastly, I will add one other piece that has been talked about a lot more over the years is neurodiversity. And it's understanding, you know, how there is actually a lot of neurodiversity in the workplace. And neurodivergence. And when a workplace is very homogeneous and hasn't had an opportunity to learn about neurodiversity or work with individuals with neurodiversity, it hasn't opened their eyes and minds and hearts to, you know, what that looks like. And so now that people are starting to talk more about that, just like, you know, we started to talk more about mental health 15 years ago, it's really opening people's minds to what a neuro-inclusive workplace looks like. And so those are some of the trends that I'm seeing right now when it comes to, you know, accessibility and supporting folks with disabilities.
So in that sense, in your time, providing greater accessibility and providing education, of course, around these matters, is there any individual success story or moment that stands out for you you'd like to share?
Yeah, you know, there are some moments that we're learning through some of our employers where, for example, one of them hired someone who was blind. And at first, you know, there was quite a bit of pushback in the organization. But they, you know, invited a speaker from the community who was really good and provided some really good basic information about, you know, how to create a welcoming, inclusive work environment for someone who is blind. And they learned some really easy tips and tricks on how to make their workplace a lot more welcoming. And the thing is, it doesn't cost a lot of money at all. And I think that that's one of the things that people are struggling with is, my goodness, you know, what can I do, you know, to make my workplace more accessible, but is that going to cost a lot of money? I think a lot of it is actually about the mindset and about having the flexibility to provide different options for people to show up in the best way that they can in the workplace and for their colleagues to also be more welcoming and understanding. So what that meant is, you know, if someone is blind, there were some strategies, for example, around having a buddy in the workplace that could help them navigate some of the meetings that they had if, you know, that person couldn't see all of the visuals. It meant, you know, creating a system where people could let the blind person know that they were in the room so they wouldn't be, you know, surprised, you know. And so those are some of the strategies that people are able to implement in the workplace. Other stories really is about a leader that I know of who actually attended one of our mental health workshops and shared that, you know, she herself had a mental health issue and was really struggling as a leader to share that information. But after attending a workshop, she was courageous enough to share that at an all-teams meeting. And what happened after that was exceptional. And she never really anticipated this, but she got so many messages and private, you know, notes from colleagues at all levels of the organization thanking her for being so authentic and for being so honest about her own challenges. And it really opened the door for that whole workplace to be more open to hearing other people's stories, whether it's stories of, you know, lack of access to services, or whether, you know, it's challenging to getting promoted, or whether it is about, you know, accessibility issues. And so I think that through that lens, what I'm learning as well over the years is that when we show up in allyship with, you know, other groups in our workplace or in our community, when we share our story, we open the doors for other people to share their stories as well. And I think that is the power of storytelling, but taking it up a notch and saying storytelling to activate good change in the workplace through culture, through policy, and through practices.
Right. Thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Absolutely.
My friends, I just love the fact that there is an association of professionals with disabilities. For the truth of the matter is, a person with a disability should never be denied the opportunity to grow or to advance in their field simply because they have a disability. They should be given the same opportunity to become a professional or a highly skilled worker, no matter what the situation. The truth is, in the working world, having a disability can actually work as an advantage in some ways. It can come as a new way of thinking, brings innovation, new ideas to the table. Yes, you might do the same thing the same way for 100 years, and it might work, but a person with a disability will always do what works for them. They will always adapt circumstance to their abilities. And the truth is, that's what we need to keep business, keep education, really to keep everything innovative. That a person with a disability will cross your path in the business world, in a school, church, what have you. It's not a question, it's a certainty. That being said, there are two key questions. Will we recognize the disability itself when a person with it comes our way? And how will we react? Will we be that source of support? Will we be someone to say, I think your abilities merit some advancement in this work. I recognize that you're bringing your A game each and every day. I want to see you grow and develop, not only for your own sake, but for the sake of those around you. We're not going to build you up simply because you have a disability, but because you're the best person to be doing this work, and because you have something unique and wonderful to bring to the table. This has been Handy Link. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.
You can deny all the things I've seen, all the things I've discovered, but not for much longer. Because too many others know what's happening out there.
I want to believe.
Hi, this is David Duchovny, and you're listening to CJSF 90.